Be excellent to each other. And party on, dudes.
Hello, world. This is Chris Abalo's podcast experiment, and I am Chris Abalo. Welcome to the show, where I am joined, as always, by my co-host, Jack DeFranco.
Hi again, everybody. I'm back.
He's back. I'm back. And we're here to talk about, frankly, the two big pieces of news that happened this weekend. Well, the two things that definitely impacted us the most personally this weekend.
Yeah. Friday night was weird.
Friday night was weird.
It was a fun get together, but it was also like, we'll explain.
Yeah, we'll get to that.
Yeah.
One thing at a time. We hung out on Friday night because pretty much since it was announced that they were releasing Bill and Ted Face the Music on premium VOD, along with in theaters where different states that have theaters are open, you know, it's going to be playing there as well. We said, all right, let's get together. We'll watch the Bill and Ted trilogy and check out the new movie. And that was the plan. And long story short, we ended up just watching Excellent Adventure and then going straight to Face the Music. So we wanted to talk about that first. And like every child of the 80s, of course, I got into Bill and Ted early on with renting it, of course, which... kind of like, I think that's how a lot of people saw. I mean, I know the movie did well, but if you my age, I mean, I was.
And that was a movie that sat on the shelves for a long time, too, according to. I watched a recent video interview with Alex Winter from the 90s with Conan, and he said that by the time the movie came out, he had kind of forgotten about it because I believe it was Orion Pictures who released it, and they went under, and then the movie just kind of sat on the shelves for 2 years, and they released it in early 89, and it just became a monster hit.
Right. It was sold in a fire sale, basically. Yeah. They thought the movie wasn't going to come out. They thought it had been shelved. I think it was Nelson Entertainment that went under. And then Orion that picked it up. And that's it's kind of a not a fluke, but that is a story that happens a lot. And that's why there are movies that bounce around for a long time that don't get released as soon as you think or you hear like, oh, this movie was in development. And why is it just coming out? Now, I forget, there was a movie with that David O. Russell directed that he wanted, like, no part of. That was done in, like, 2007 that just got released straight to DVD, like, 2 years ago. And he's not even credited as director. Okay, that might be a unique circumstance. But still, there are a lot of movies where that happens, you know, and especially now when you hear about mergers and different studios being bought by different parent companies and things like that. And even when you have big studios like Fox being bought up by Disney. It's still something that happens and stuff that's in development or stuff that's done gets shuffled around to accommodate whatever or companies go under. And that's happened to a bunch of smaller production companies.
Yeah. And kind of a weird movie to be shelved. I mean, it looks like it had high production value. It had, I mean, the
for the time, for sure.
Yeah, at the time. Yeah. With special effects and George Carlin being a part of it, being a big comedian in the 80s, you would think that this movie would have found. Would have been promoted somehow, and to know that it was something that was shelved and sold in a fire sale, like really, like that, like I thought that was like a done deal, kind of would have been a slam dunk, but it really wasn't. It's fascinating.
Oh yeah, well, it's also definitely a side effect of when you consider nobody knows what's going to be a hit. I mean, there are sometimes you'll hear stories, and I assume people are hopefully most of the time being honest about it, where. They say, oh, we knew we had something special. I believe that does happen when you're making a movie. You can tell. I also believe people can probably tell when they have a turd on their hands while they're making it. Like, this isn't going to happen. This is going to be very good. And I think this is probably one of those cases where they felt like they had something really good and it was just delayed due to financial circumstances. You know, this production company is going under and we have this movie in the can. It's a teen movie, which were certainly way, way popular in the 80s. And a time travel movie that wasn't some kind of Back to the Future ripoff. So
no, this could work. An homage to Doctor Who.
Yeah, well, that's it. And that's one of the criticisms Doctor Who fans apparently have, because it's a phone booth and, you know, there was always a phone booth and blah, blah, blah.
Oh, but that's a tribute. It should be celebrated. It shouldn't be.
Well, at the same time, Doctor Who in the 80s wasn't a household name, particularly in the U.S. And this is a very, very American movie because they're very California Valley guys.
Yes.
So that.
Distinctly American.
Totally. So the fact that I don't know that people, I mean, maybe if you were deep into nerd fandoms in the 80s when you actually had to really hunt and dig for stuff that was.
Yeah, you got like the magazines and then probably ordered videos from catalogs or something. Like,
right.
Doctor Who. I've only heard that in passing or been. If there were conventions in the 80s, they were way smaller in comparison.
Right.
And today. So I'm sure people picked up like, oh, what's Doctor Who? What's. And somebody in England could have been like, what's this? So.
Totally. Yeah. And also, if you hung out in comic shops, which weren't as cool then as they are now.
No.
they were for losers and slackers and whatever other stereotypes at the time. This is when comics weren't cool. And if you read comics, you weren't cool. You were a nerd or you need to grow up or whatever. And now.
Yeah, you're a child.
Whole other thing. Yeah. But I rented it. My sister and I watched it endlessly. I can't even tell you how many times. it was just one of those movies we watched together. We quoted like crazy and still do, frankly. And it was my introduction to George Carlin, who I didn't even look into, and I should say get into his comedy, until right around freshman year of high school. So my introduction to George Carlin was as Rufus, and he ended up becoming a very important figure in my life through comedy and through his writing. I mean, his stand-up, he's the best who's ever done it, in my opinion. So there we go. But
yes, thank you, George.
Yeah, thank you, George. Thank you, George. little slightly inside callback. But anyway, I watched the movie, I can't even tell you how many times, and then Bogus Journey came out, and I was way excited, and I actually went and saw it with my father at a second-run theater for $2 or $3. A theater's not even there anymore in Toms River. I don't even know if you remember it, Jack, because you're just a couple of years younger than me.
I think I do. I think it was actually where, in Toms River, where the giant shop right is.
That's
now.
Exactly where it is. It was Laurelton Circle,
in
I think.
October of, like, the fall of 96, it was like, I drove by it with my I was in the car with my parents. I'm like, Eraser's still playing? It was like October, June. I was like, what the hell theater is this?
That's right. It probably was still, it was around for a little while.
It was a long time. Yeah. I remember being fascinated by it because my uncle lived over there. And whenever we passed by, I'd be like, what's this old theater playing? Like, I need to know. So, but I never actually went there. So I had the two theaters in Bricktown that just, pretty much where my childhood was centered. So.
Well, yeah, two theaters in very close proximity to each other.
Yes.
And the one became a second-run theater where movies were like $3 eventually.
Yeah, that's especially... what the last movie I saw there was a Rocky and Bullwinkle movie in 2000. So, and it didn't even finish. It cut halfway through and we left. So,
oh, really?
Yeah, it was bad. And they saw the Hercules, like, it was in the year 2000, I remember. And the Hercules posters were still up. And I'm like, that came out 3 years ago. Why doesn't this theater update anything?
Wow.
Yeah. It was actually kind of sad because that was a theater I saw the majority of movies in my childhood at. And it just became this rundown dump. And I was like, ugh, this is a sad day in the life of Jack, a 15-year-old Jack DeFranco. And why am I seeing the Rocky Bullwinkle movie again?
Yeah, some would say you didn't miss much. Actually, funnily enough, that's in my queue on the Stars app. Because I thought, I haven't seen that in a while. I remember watching that in Charlie's Angels in the same night.
I should probably watch it with you because I've never seen it since the film cut in half.
I haven't seen it in a while. I remember enjoying it as a 19-year-old, but I was probably happy just to see Robert De Niro doing something way out of left field.
That's why I think I saw it. My dad loved the cartoon as a kid and all the stars that were in it. He's like, we have to go see this. And it just got getting pushed back and we went to the dump theater and then we never saw it. So
it may not hold up. I guess we'll have to find that one out. But
the negative
should.
Didn't that day and I'm not sure if it...
Well, anyway, ended up dragging my dad to Bogus Journey and I loved it. And I know a lot of people don't think highly of Bogus Journey, and just to kind of skip back to Friday again. Yeah.
Present company included.
Yeah, we
I don't hate it, but
right, but
I'll get to my story in a little bit. But
yeah, we'll get to you. Let me wrap up my little thing so we can we can get to the third movie, which is kind of the point. But I'm the person who liked it out of basically the four of us who were watching. It was myself and my girlfriend Sherry went down to Jack and Noelle's place to watch the movies, and we were just yakking as we do. We spend the first however long we were there bullshitting and then eating dinner, And then we sat down to watch Excellent Adventure. And at the point when that was over, I think it was like 11 o'clock, something like that.
Maybe
a little after, maybe 11:30. And since they're not crazy about Bogus Journey, we ended up skipping it and just going straight to Face Music. But I like Bogus Journey because, number one, death. The Grim Reaper steals the movie, hands down.
The best
down.
Part of the movie, without a doubt.
Absolutely. I just love that he's kind of petty and bitchy. And like, I think it's a great portrayal of the Grim Reaper, someone who's supposed to be this intimidating character and is actually kind of not. And even when you see him, you're just like, oh, shit. You know, the first time he shows up behind them after they realize they're dead. And then it's, oh, they're going to hell. And then he ends up just being petty. You know, don't overlook my butt. You know, all those little kind of petty things. And then he ends up just going full show business by the end of the movie. And I just thought that was great. I just thought it was such a funny portrayal of that character. The best character in the movie. And I also love that Bogus Journey wasn't a retread of the first movie, which happens with a lot of comedy sequels.
I'll give it that.
Totally.
I'll definitely give it that.
I like that it's his own story. It totally could have been. It could have been, we need to go back in time and get different historical figures for blah, 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 blah.
Wait, they're going
to
fail their college exam.
Yeah, it totally could have been that. It really could have been just a complete retread. But instead, it builds off the first movie. And I thought the idea of Bill and Ted going to heaven and hell was great. There's not a whole lot of time travel in the movie. I thought the evil robot versions were fun.
Yeah.
Because you got to see Bill and Ted against Bill and Ted, which is one of the things that, you know, I mean, that was one of the best moments in the first movie when they show up and they're outside the Circle K. And the us's from a little bit in the future show up and let them know they're going to go back in time and to trust Rufus and everything else. And to see evil robot Bill and Ted, I thought was hysterical. And even the silliness in the end with Station Two little aliens that become one big alien that's a genius. I get that that's a little silly, but you know what? I thought the ending was, to take from them, triumphant. I thought it was a lot of fun. And it just from the first viewing, and that's also because I was 10, so I didn't have a whole lot of expectation. I wasn't really comparing it to the first movie or anything. And it was a short window. It was only came out 2 years later. So that's the other thing, is that it was at the time when comedy sequels would come out quickly if they were going to make a sequel. It wasn't, you got to wait 20 years, like a, let's say, like a Dumb and Dumber 2, or just going back to sequels from, you know, that have taken a long time to come about, like, you know, Independence Day. And I loved it. And I had the VHS and I had the soundtrack to both movies. And
soundtracks are amazing for both those films.
I do love them. I mean, they're very reflective of the time because there's a lot of great rock music on those soundtracks.
Yes.
I love it. I mean, the only band you've ever heard of beyond the soundtrack of the first movie is Extreme. And Play With Me was a song that was on their first album anyway, but was kind of remixed a bit and then put on the soundtrack. But the other bands on the soundtrack, unfortunately, you never really heard a whole lot from. But a lot of notables on the soundtrack to the second one, with there being Winger and Slaughter and a bunch of other people who are great. Richie Kotzen. Steve Vai, of course, did the score, which is amazing because he's one of the greatest guitar players ever. Yeah, of course. God Gave Rock and Roll to You, too, is great. It is one of the best Kiss songs, that's for
sure. I love it,
And even people who don't like Kiss.
She doesn't even like Kiss.
Same with our friend Dan. He doesn't like Kiss, but he loves that song. Well, I shouldn't say that. Fast forward years after Bill and Ted, I'm talking like maybe 10 years ago, and he was asking me about the first couple of Kiss albums, because his whole thing is he likes music to sound raw. He doesn't like polished stuff, and that's why he doesn't like a lot of 80s rock. But because they're very... those first few Kiss albums are very raw and kind of live in the studio. He likes that. So I said, well, the first three Kiss albums before they really took off, I said, they're probably your thing. So I think he likes them a little more now. But yeah, that's one of those songs where if you don't like Kiss, then you may very well like God Gave Rock and Roll to You.
Yeah, if 80s Kiss had the makeup, they probably would have been my favorite band. Because I love
And that's why I get the appeal of 70s Kiss. It makes total sense to me.
Yeah,
but,
absolutely. If I was a seven-year-old kid in the 70s and saw that, like, what is that? I'm going there.
Oh, totally. Because it is. Yeah. It's comic book characters come to life. It's the closest they had at the time. And this, you know, they predate Star Wars and everything. So that was, you can understand why kids get into it and why, of course, there were toys and comic books and all that other stuff. But anyway, there have been rumors forever about the third Bill and Ted movie, and they were trying to get it off the ground. And it was one of those situations where it would seem obvious that this movie should just be a lock. You would think this movie is going to happen no matter what, because you know there's an audience for it. But when you have examples of similar movies, which you think, well, of course they're going to do a sequel, and of course people are going to love it, like Dumb and Dumber 2, and not so crazy about it. Didn't make huge money. I don't know what the expectations were for that. I mean, I thought it was okay, but I have no desire to watch it again. Just
never saw
in
it.
In the example that really, I mean, I wouldn't say don't watch it.
It
but
didn't
I,
look like it was like the first movie, first Dumb and Dumber. I don't, it just there's something about it where it just like the jokes just kind of landed, and this one just felt like it was trying too hard and had stupid gags, and I was like. Like, even the, I remember the trailer when he, like, pulled the catheter out of himself or something. I'm like, like, I don't,
all right. Like, yeah. I do remember that.
Land with you. It's like, this doesn't really even look like Dumb and Dumber. It looks more like a cartoon. And I know Dumb and Dumber isn't, like, the most smart thing, but there's something about that movie that has a charm where it's like, their stupidity and the people around them are just like, oh, wow. like Mary Samsonite and all the people, like, the guy, like, in the restaurant with the pills and everything else. Like, their stupidity causes so much, and this trailer for the second one looked like, this looks like a bunch of stupid sketches stitched together, and I just had no desire whatsoever to see it. So.
Well, in a case like that, too, I think a big part of it is the longer they waited, that's another thing, because now the characters need to be older, and you need to create a story based on how much time has passed.
And they're still stupid 20 years later.
Yeah, there's a surprise. But they get, and that's one of the good things, honestly, about something like Dumb and Dumber, and Bill and Ted, is that those movies, and this is one of the reasons they're good, is that there's these characters just go about their business, and there's no condescending tone from the, you know, you're not supposed to condescend to them as an audience. You're not supposed to look at these characters and think they're stupid. You're just watching them do their stuff, and they're just never they just carry on. They're right on track. They're never thrown by anything else, even when they have their stupid moments.
Yeah.
And you know, Bill and Ted, you can look at as, you know, a caricature of kind of a you know, dopey California teenagers, but they're lovable. There's not a point where you look at them,
think about them.
Yeah. And they start out kind of stupid, you know. Who's Joan of Arc? Noah's wife. Caesar is the salad dressing dude. You know, all these little things where you think, oh, these are dumb. But at the same time.
But what teenager couldn't relate to that, or what kid couldn't relate to be like, oh, I hate history.
Absolutely. The older I get, the more I think, you know, that I probably wasn't that different in high school when it came to being a little bit checked out. I mean, especially as high school went on, as came closer to graduation.
Yeah.
Then I thought, you know what? I really, and I said it again the other night when we watched Excellent Adventure. I said, I bet I was no smarter in high school.
And maybe it was the school system that failed them, because if you think about all the people that have to go back in time and find, it's like those people are all over the place. There's not like one linear thing they're actually studying in history class other than who was this, who was that, who was this. I get confused too.
Yeah.
So like, really?
And now you're supposed to have a final report about all these people if you learn nothing. And to be honest, I think all of us learn more about these historical characters from Excellent Adventure than we learned in school.
Yeah.
But having said that, having lived in California for a couple of years, I do think there's a, I'm not surprised given the California public school system and having met a bunch of locals who were out there.
Yeah.
I'm not going to praise the New Jersey public school system, but nonetheless,
yeah,
that's low hanging fruit for me to just make fun of California. But anyway,
is San Dimas real? Like, I keep forgetting.
You know what's so funny? I didn't know it was real until I literally saw it on Google Maps when I was heading east of Los Angeles, and I saw it. I was like, holy shit, San Dimas is real.
You didn't know the Circle K was real either, too.
Yeah, I didn't. I thought Circle K was made up for the movies, because everything was kind of made up in a lot of movies, or at least in TV shows. They weren't using a lot of actual stores, a lot of actual franchises. And at the same time, we don't have the Circle K out here. We had Wawa and Quick Check and, you know, Krausers and, you know, there's Cumberland Farms. There were certain places we had out here that they didn't have there, but there weren't movies that were made in New Jersey about local Jerseyans that we would have known. So I'm not surprised. I thought it was a fictitious place. And, you know, I forget when I finally saw Circle K. I don't know if it was in California. It specifically was the first time I even saw one. But yeah, I thought it was made up for the movie.
Yeah.
I thought it was a fake convenience store. And same thing with San Dimas. I thought it was a fake town until, you know, I was in my 30s a couple of years ago when when I was heading east. And I don't even remember what I was looking for. But I know I was heading that far. Because San Dimas isn't that far from, I mean, I was living in Burbank at the time. It's between 45 minutes and an hour. It's actually not that far from, where's that joint we went to when you and Ryan came out 4 years ago?
Oh, City of Industry.
Yeah, it's not that. I mean, I'm saying that as in it's within striking distance, like maybe 15, 20 minutes, if I'm remembering correctly, because it was probably around that time or maybe a little bit before you guys visited me that I saw San Dimas was a real place. And it had never come up.
Okay, in that city of industry also, right by the place we were going too.
Yeah, go figure.
Yeah, so.
But, you know, it's a movie. And as a kid, you just think everything's made up. Everything's created. You know, I mean, now product placement is such a heavy part of so many big movies. When it comes to restaurants and what they're drinking and the cars they're driving and everything else. So now it's a different story. But when we were kids, everything was just kind of or it was organically part of it, like Bill and Ted was. They went to the Circle K because that's what there was out there and what there is.
Yeah.
But anyway, there have been rumors about the third movie for a while. And I'd seen Alex Winter, who's been doing documentary films, who plays Bill, if you didn't know. Then when he did interviews, he would say that they have a script, they like it, or the writers are working on a script. Various stages of the development of a third movie.
Yeah, I heard that for years, too. Actually, in 2014, when I was listening to the Nerdist podcast, he was on. I listened to his episode, and he said, yeah, we're still down for doing it. We're interested, and we're trying to get the story right, so on and so forth. But as far as I'm into it, I know Keanu's into it if it happens. So. And that was 6 years ago at this point.
Right. Well, funnily enough, I saw a screening in, I believe it was 2017, at the Aero Theater in Santa Monica. They were doing Excellent Adventure and Bogus Journey in the theater, which is great because I'd never seen Excellent Adventure on the big screen, and I wanted to, especially because, you know, one of those movies from your childhood, especially if you didn't catch it in theaters, I still get that thrill of, and I know you do, too.
Oh, me too. I wish that the theater, that Cinemark that we live next to now, was still doing classic movies. Because in summer 2015, they were doing all the 80s movies. And I was like, I can't wait to see what's next. I missed Coming to America, and Bill and Ted didn't happen. So
I saw
too many that I can't even remember at that point. But I know that Bill and Ted wasn't one of them. But it was on my list of, like, I wish this would be one of them.
Right. Oh, it didn't get played a lot. I mean, sometimes Arclight Cinemas, which is another set in Southern California, a small theater chain, we'll show old movies in either with some theme, it'll be summer movies, or with the AFI, they'll do, you know, previous Oscar winners. I've gone to see a bunch of movies, older movies, and, you know, Blazing Saddles and Goodfellas and all sorts of stuff. The Thing, twice, which was great in the theater, and a movie I've seen at home 100 times, but seeing it in the theater, especially with a crowd like that, and knowing there's a few first-timers in there, it's a great experience, and that's another reason why I
saw a crappy
like
prequel in theaters, and that wasn't nearly as good.
You're kidding.
Remember?
But anyway, there was going to be the screening of Excellent Adventure, Bogus Journey, and it was going to be Alex Winter was going to be there. And forgive me, I don't remember every actor's name, but like the actress who played Missy. And I believe the producer was there. And I don't think the writers were. I don't remember offhand. I'm sure I saved it. I'm sure there's a screenshot on my phone, and I should have looked for it while talking about it. But anyway, there was going to be an assemblage of the cast in between the two movies. So I said, well, aside from the fact I would want to see these two movies on the big screen anyway, having only seen Bogus Journey in the theater, I said, and I didn't even want to drive to Santa Monica from where I was. It's like an hour and a half, even though it's, you know, 16 miles or something. But
fucking California.
Fucking California. Jesus, fucking California. I said, we got to go, and got tickets for Sherry and myself and my sister, and one of her friends came along and only stuck around for Excellent Adventure. But or I should say left after the Q&A.
I would have stuck around for Bogus Journey.
Well, especially in that sense, why not? I mean, to be fair, you know, my sister never saw Bogus Journey either. She just had no interest because she's one of those people who, if the first one's good.
I saw that first, actually.
Really?
I saw Bogus Journey first when I was a kid. Well, Bill and Ted was, I knew who Bill and Ted were just through television. I think there was an animated series also.
There was.
Yeah.
I have some of them on DVD.
Yeah. I had two older sisters who were, I mean, my older sister Louise had a crush on Keanu Reeves. So whenever a new Keanu Reeves movie came out, she would rent it and watch it with my mom and my dad while she was visiting for the weekend. So I knew who Bill and Ted were. And I kept seeing the commercial for Bogus Journey thinking that looks like fun. And I didn't know what the white guy was who was following them. I was 6 years old when the movie came out. So I asked my mom, I want to see Bill and Ted. Can I please rent Bill and Ted? So she rented Bogus Journey. And 6, 7 years old, I enjoyed it that afternoon. I watched it, and I didn't see it for 23, 24 years after that. So I watched Bogus Journey on Netflix 5 years ago when they were both on Netflix. Noelle and I did a double feature in our old apartment. I thought, wow, Bogus Journey is really not that good. But I've seen Bill and Ted, The Excellent Adventure, at previous points. I can't remember when I first saw it, probably my teenage years, and watched it several times. Whenever it was on TV, I'd sit and watch it. So that's my Bill and Ted experience, to just kind of circle back to that. But Bogus Journey was the first one I saw because it was the one out in 1991, 92 on theaters and right. TV and everything else, that I was like, oh, I want to see Bill and Ted. That's the one I want to see. Which, funnily enough, I found out was called Bill and Ted Go to Hell at first.
Yeah. Well, that was really interesting. And when it comes to, as far as this Q&A, where they're telling stories, you know, the cast and everybody, they're talking about different elements of making the movie and the whole story behind, you know, they didn't know the movie was going to come out and it'd been done a while ago and everybody moved on to other projects. And then all of a sudden it was, oh, this movie's coming out. And then it's successful, which is another surprise. Not only is it coming out, but it actually did well. Oh, and there's going to be a second one. They want to write a second one. So then that came about. And there are great, I'm sure anybody who has even a remote interest in these movies, at least finding out more about it, you probably know. And if you don't, I'll tell you, there's the company Shout Factory that we've mentioned a bunch of times that releases excellent special edition Blu-rays. They have a Bill and Ted collection with the first two movies on Blu-ray, which look great. And also special features, including an hour-long documentary making of about each movie, which is great.
And I'd watch that.
Oh, dude, they are really, really good. I mean, that, and I know you're fascinated by production and you like to know what goes into the movies that we like and how movies are made.
Always.
And it is really interesting.
Since I saw the making of Batman Returns on TV as a kid, I've always been like, ooh.
Oh, those were the days when there were primetime specials when the movie was coming
CBS
out.
CBS special? the week the movie came out?
Oh, these tabs all. I think the last one I remember seeing was True Lies. I remember they did a primetime special for that on Fox.
I think Independence Day was the last one I saw. It was like coming out this Thursday or whatever.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, this looks great.
Those are the days. Those are the HBO first look eventually, too. The 15 minute or 30 minute making of featurettes, which were great. Which some of them ended up on the DVDs, and I was always excited. Like, I remember watching
DVDs. I'm like, wait, you could watch the making of now on DVD?
I know for us, there are tons of people who never understood why I loved when there was like a 2-disc special edition of a movie coming out. So many people would just say, I just want to watch the movie. And that's become more of a, that's become even more of the rule, whereas you and I are the exception, because people are just happy to stream movies. There may be some
extreme, like, oh, I bought 3 copies of Terminator 2 because there's a new feature every other year.
I'm less ridiculous about that as time goes on. I do have Terminator 2 twice on DVD. So I'm not going to excuse it, but there also was that's one of those movies, too, where because the ownership of it has changed hands so many times, it actually does, you know, there's usually a little bit of a difference in the actual picture quality. And not everything carries over. But have I watched all the features? No. The first 2-disc special edition.
I own Star Wars every version that comes out.
Yeah, so fuck you.
No. Yeah, fuck. Hey. At least mine are different. George made them that way.
Exactly. You're a... You suffer from multi-formatting.
James Cameron left his movie perfect and George is tinkering away. What's your excuse?
That's true. Yeah, you got added CGI for an extra $20 every time.
Yeah, but hey, wait a minute.
But during this Q&A, we're all over the road, but that's kind of our way. Yeah. But during this Q&A, they did talk about the third one, and we have a script we like, and we're trying to get it going. And, you know, again, this is 3 years ago. So they were kind of getting closer to it. And I said, man, I hope this happens. I really hope it happens. And by the way, my sister did like Bogus Journey, obviously not as much as the first one, but she enjoyed it. Having seen it for the first time in the theater, which again, if you're going to see a movie for the first time, I would prefer that be my first time for the majority of movies. I would have loved if we'd seen Face the Music in the theater.
Oh,
and
I'm
that
so
was how we saw it for the first
that.
Time.
It's like, because it was coming out around this time, end of summer. Like, that's a perfect way to end
the
it.
The same day. They released it on VOD the day it was supposed to come out in theaters.
Yeah.
So we didn't even have to wait for
perfect.
It.
Perfect. Let's end it the way it was. Like,
yeah, we'll see it the way a lot of people saw those movies.
Yeah.
Even though we would have rather gone to the theater.
Totally.
But when it was finally announced that a deal's been made, we're making these movies, because it seemed like it was going to happen anyway, because Alex Winter said that, you know, they were in and they want to do it. And the only thing they could do, and I said the same thing when Toy Story 4 was announced, well, they have nothing to gain by doing another one. Nobody needs to do it for the money. they don't want to rip off the fans. They have a perfect, not a perfect ending, but there's still a pretty great ending to Bogus Journey. You could say if that's the end of the Bill and Ted story, it's a satisfactory ending. Wild Stallions
and
becomes
it was
a huge band.
Time, and that's it. They just finished it and they moved on.
Totally. So they can only lose if they make another one and it's bad. So why do that? And they weren't going to just do this for like a cash grab, and you could tell. And why? They don't have to do it. You know, Alex Winter's happy being a filmmaker. Keanu Reeves is doing great and now probably better than ever.
Assholes think, well, Alex Winter hasn't worked in like 30 years. No, he has.
He's just not acting as much.
Yeah.
Like he's working
on the internet. Yeah.
Well, he's one of those dudes too. He's been an actor forever. Like since he was a little kid doing theater productions and everything.
I saw The Lost Boys for the first time. I never saw The Lost Boys before, but he's in it.
He is.
He's in it before Bill and Ted. He's on the poster.
Yeah. Maybe you didn't notice it before, kids, but he is.
Yeah.
That's
the
other notable.
And somebody from Corey Feldman's not, and he's more of a star in the movie.
That's true.
Yeah.
That's a good point, actually.
Yeah.
Well, anyway. They had actually said at that Q&A, Alex Winter had said, you know, we're actually, Keanu was supposed to be here, but we couldn't announce that because then the place just would have been flooded with people here to see Keanu and not necessarily see the movies. And he said, he called me a couple hours ago. He's like, dude, I feel so sick. I just really don't think I can make it. So they actually were supposed to be there. And I would have lost my shit seeing both Bill and Ted in person. I mean, it was still cool seeing Alex Winter and a bunch of other people who were involved. And I can't remember everybody offhand, honestly, but that's the idea isn't to talk about this Q&A. The idea is to talk about Face the Music. So let's skip ahead to that.
Yes.
Finally, now that you've listened to all this, let's finally talk about Face the Music. I got to say, there are a lot of sequels, and, you know, we've mentioned a couple already, like Dumb and Dumber 2 or Independence Day Resurgence, where you can say, man, I wish they didn't do a sequel to this. Like, it was fine the way it was. And this is not that case. I'm happy to say that if there was going to be a third Bill and Ted movie, I'm happy this is it.
Me too. I love this movie. I absolutely love this movie.
And I'll tell you, for me personally, it may sound ridiculous, but I needed this movie as well. I really, with everything going on the last couple of months and without having any new movies to see, I mean, movies I hadn't seen before from years ago. I've watched a lot of cheesy action movies and B movies and stuff like that that I hadn't seen before. There have been a lot of movie watching in these last couple of months, or revisited some older movies that I liked when I was younger, you know, from the 90s, which we talked about in a few episodes back, if you want to check that out. But to actually see a new movie that I wanted to see, and seeing it when we would have seen it, because we would have been there opening night if theaters were open and the world were normal, as opposed to
dinner, we would have went.
Yeah, exactly. Uh-oh, Jack's frozen. That's okay. I'll carry on. But the idea that we could actually see the... Oh, he's back. All right, cool. I see here. Blinking.
Yeah.
For a second, there was like...
But yeah.
We all experienced that. Anyway, so I'm just... honestly, I needed this movie, and I needed something to be this...
just
I mean,
fun.
It's tough to say it's grounded in reality, because it's a movie about time traveling.
Yeah.
But it is fun. It is an optimistic movie, and it is a movie that takes us out of everything that's going on in the world today, as you would hope any movie would be kind of an escape. But there's also not any cynicism about it, which I really like. There's
not
no like, you know, life sucks, or, you know, don't forget there's still stuff to be upset about. It really is all the way through an optimistic movie, and Bill and Ted are characters that are just always up and always happy and always optimistic. And
nobody's
frankly,
kicking them while they're down in the movie either. Like,
no, not at
like,
all.
Like, man, Bill and Ted are real fucking losers. It's like, no, they're just, they're still Bill and Ted after all these years and people love them.
Yeah.
But, you know, the point of the movie is also like, hey, you know, what are you doing? But it's not like their failures are not like this. They're not like dark and brooding Bill and Ted. They're just Bill and Ted.
So no, not at all. And I even like that element of like they're still trying to write the song. They released a bunch of albums and they were as huge as they were supposed to be for a while, but they have yet to write the one song that they're supposed to write that unites the world and the universe and everything.
Yeah.
And I like that there's the up against the clock element. So the movie kind of plays out in real time as the first one kind of sort of did, except this one obviously moves at a faster pace because at the point when they find out they need to write and perform the song, they have 77 minutes, something like that.
And I like the play on that, because I think it was like 13 minutes into the movie, like, oh, it's only a 90-minute movie. That's it was such like a tongue-in-cheek thing.
Yeah. Yeah, it's like this movie is going to happen in the exact amount of time it does.
Yeah, because an excellent adventure. They got a lot done in that afternoon. They went to the police station. They went to do their report. They went to the water slides. They went to the mall. It was like, wow. Wow.
Yeah, they had a
start at 5 a.m.? Like,
I know. They were basically up all night. They had a full-ass day before giving that report.
Yes.
Like, they were literally up all night going through time collecting historical figures. And then all of a sudden, when they get to the Circle K to meet now who are the past Bill and Ted, and when Rufus first shows up to meet them, they have 2 hours. So at that point, it's 12:30. Now you've been at this for who knows how long. Yeah. You know, it's been like 15 hours since they started this yeah. excellent adventure, and they still need to, you know, get everything together, and yeah, it's crazy. But I did like that they were up against the clock. I thought it would have been really easy and frankly disappointing if their teenage daughters were current Gen Z stereotypes, caricatures, yes. always on their phone, didn't think their dads were cool or whatever. And most teenagers don't think their parents are cool. That's just par for the course when you're a teenager. Yeah. But the idea that they obviously are more influenced by Bill and Ted than they are their mothers, but they're not annoying teenagers. They're obviously huge music fans. And same thing, they're up, they're optimistic, and they don't get deterred at any point during their adventure, which is essentially the B story. I can nitpick about little things here and there, but you know what?
Is that the one you wanted to nitpick about?
What's that?
I heard you when he came on screen, you were like, ugh.
Oh, Dave Grohl. Yeah. The fact that Dave Grohl has a quick cameo is the low point of the movie. I will say that. That's just for me personally. There's too much Dave Grohl. Any Dave Grohl is too much these days for me. Yeah. But I know I'm in the minority on that, too. I will admit, though, there is without giving it away, if you haven't seen the movie yet, and you absolutely should, by the way, we're absolutely recommending the movie.
Yes,
particularly if you're a fan.
Whenever you feel it's so good.
Yeah, and that's so it good. Too. Like, especially for you can rent it for 20 or own it for 25 right now. It's totally worth it.
It is a future purchase of mine, probably digitally. So
definitely.
Actually, all three of them. I think I'm going to bundle them all together and just get the whole bundle.
There you go. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
but there is. It's not even fair to call it an homage. Let's just say there's a Rufus moment in there. Where it's kind of a tribute without taking you out of the movie. And I'll admit, I teared up when I saw George. And I didn't want to draw attention to myself, and I didn't think it was gonna, but you know, because I always have to wear glasses when I'm hanging out at your place because you're fucking cat. I did pull them off and have to like wipe my eyes. I did tear up a little bit in each eye right in the center here. And
as a full-fledged grown-ass man who cried at, you know, Chewie, we're home, and you know,
and when Han showed up in Rise of Skywalker,
yeah, I it's perfectly fine, and I actually glad you did that. So
me too.
I got a little like, oh, that's so cool, like a moment of like, oh, good, they paid a little tribute there.
Well, I figured they were going to do something, and that was it. I didn't know what to expect, and then when the moment happened. And it's brief, and it's not like, hey, here's George Carlin. Remember he died a few years ago? It isn't something, again, that takes you out of the movie, but just that moment of...
It's very sweet.
Yeah, it was. It was a very sweet moment, and it did just move me. I gotta say, mm-hmm. I did get that way. But the movie was great. I do think the ending was kind of abrupt, but it made up for the fact that there's a post-credit scene, I should say, or the fact there's a post-credit scene made up for the fact that all of a sudden the movie's just kind of like, oh, that was it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. And not in a bad way. It was just surprising that it ended on, pardon the pun, the note that it did. But there's a great post-credit scene. And I do like the fact that everybody's saying, so is there going to be another movie? You know, like everybody does with any movie when, any hack interviewer
is
just going to be
over?
Like, so is there going to be a fourth movie? Are we going to see Bill and Ted back on the big screen? You know, all those hokey questions.
Well, is Tony Stark really dead? I'm pretty sure.
Yeah. Are we going to be seeing Tony Stark again? Yeah, that's it. Robert Downey Jr. is never going to get away from that question because people have nothing to say.
Yeah.
It's terrible. But regardless, at the same time, everybody expects him to answer that question forever. And same with when anyone's doing press for a movie, especially a franchise. So is this the last time we're going to see Bill and Ted? They're saying right now that they haven't even thought about a fourth one. They're not saying no. They're just saying that it's not a thought right now. Everything's been in making this movie happen.
It should just like with the amount of time that they put into this and the amount of years that have been, this has been discussed about making a third film. It's been about 10 years altogether.
Yeah.
Why concentrate on like, let's relaunch the franchise. It's like, just make your movie, And if it's successful and people want more, then if you have an idea for a story, go for it. But if not, then just, you've told your story. And I think that that's what they did here. They accomplished it. And this isn't a knock on them. It's way better than I ever expected it to be. And it's not because I thought, well, I had really low expectations. No, I thought this was, I was looking for an enjoyable film. And that's what I got. But what I got out of it more was just like, this is such just a feel good, fun movie. So,
oh, for sure. And that's it. And just to say,
and
it's,
nothing could be worse than the Bill and Ted show at the, at, was it?
Universal
Florida. Oh. Oh my God. The Bill and Ted stage show. 6 years ago, Noelle and I went to Disney for our anniversary, and we went to Universal the day before. And I was like, Bill and Ted show, this is great. And it was fucking awful.
Really?
It was all modern. It was stage show with modern pop stars. And it just kept like, I was just in my, but the thing is, if you left, the audience calls you out like, oh, see you later. See you later, dude. And everybody points and laughs. So I'm like, I'm going to have to suffer through this because I'm not getting made fun of my Bill and Ted.
I never got to experience that.
You sullied the name of Bill and Ted, you bastards. But no, Face the Music was, like you said, it was what we needed. I needed a good laugh. I needed an escape. And all four of us got that Friday night, and I couldn't be happier. I want to revisit it again soon.
Yeah, totally. Me too. I've been saying that since. I'm like, I want to watch it. I want to watch it. Like, I got to rewatch. And that's it, too. Watching it the first time, you know, I pick up on so many more things that I like watching the first two on repeated viewings. And it's going to be the same with this movie, I'm sure, which I'll be watching just a bunch of times. But
yes.
I'm not going to nitpick it. I had a lot of fun with it. If you're on the fence about it, and Jack knows a lot about sitting on the fence, but do it. Rent it. And support the movie, too. I mean, that's kind of the other thing that, I mean, this is why movies like this get held up. Part of it could be when you look at the lackluster performances of sequels that came out way later, whether it's Dumb and Dumber 2, Independence Day Resurgence, Zoolander 2. You know, there are some movies you can point to where they waited a long time to do another one, and it didn't perform as well. And I think that makes it harder. It definitely must have influenced the fact that, you know, Bill and Ted Face the Music took a long time to actually come to be, because apparently they've had this script for like 4 years and they've been trying to get it going. But it's also, you know, there isn't a whole lot of investment in movies like this anymore either, because it's not a huge theatrical release. Like, you know, it's not a tentpole movie like so many franchises are. This is a much smaller franchise and one that hasn't had a new movie in 29 years.
And not only that, but Hollywood, you're only as good as your last movie. And fortunately enough, Keanu Reeves in the past several years has been, have another career resurgence. He's the king of career resurgences. Like, you think he's down and out, he's going to come back. And I mean, with the John Wick films, the sequels in 2014 was the first one, but with the sequel in 2017, 2019, and just this, what's been called the Keanu Sons, people want to see more Keanu Reeves movies. So why not have it be one of his most famous roles that got literally started his career?
His first most beloved character.
Come back.
Yeah, because he's got three now. He's got Ted, he's got Neo, and now he has John Wick. So he has three, which is way unusual. But yeah, I agree. I definitely think the fact that the popularity of the John Wick movies and the fact that Keanu is so loved right now.
People love, even in public, like the public perception of him. Noelle loves BuzzFeed and all these other things. And she's always had a crush on Keanu Reeves. She's loved him since childhood. But like, he just is a nice person and people like him. He's one of the people in Hollywood you can see is genuine. So to like, oh, another Keanu movie. Oh, Bill and Ted. And like a younger audience would be like, oh, I like Bill and Ted, the 18-year-old who sees John Wick. Oh, John Wick's in this new comedy. No, wait, this is a sequel. Then it starts all over again. You have your new audience. So
yeah, of course. Well, listen, some kids, the first Marvel movie they saw was Endgame. Just because that was the age, you know, they were probably six years old, and it's, there we go. Which is another thing. I will say, I really don't know why this movie was PG-13. I don't get it. There's virtually no cursing
nowadays anyway.
Well, so. That's true. PG is rare, but I really
PG's
don't know.
Like trolls, or I don't even know if that's even PG. Trolls.
It's got to be. I'm sure there's a lot of toilet humor in that movie. It's got to be PG. But yeah. I've never seen him.
Seen it 40 times last week. So
awesome.
With her 5-year-old niece. So,
but there's a. I mean, aside from the representation of hell, which I feel like was a lot darker in Bogus Journey. And Bogus Journey had more scary yes. imagery, let's say, in hell than this movie did.
Oh,
I really
the
don't
hallway
get
scene, like when they're chasing. With
yeah.
Like,
oh God,
corner,
yeah.
That's...
Granny S. Preston yeah. Esquire is frightening. So is the Easter Bunny. I mean, there's a lot of scary stuff in the second one as opposed to the third one. I really don't know why it's PG-13. To be completely honest, there's no serious cursing or anything like that. But whatever.
Yeah, no, like set, like you know, oh, you know, sex stuff, sexiness, or like anything at all to. It could pass as a family movie. It really is that funny. Maybe
it is.
A couple curses here and there could be levy, but I don't know.
But nothing heavy. Nothing gratuitous.
No, not at all.
So I didn't really understand that.
Yeah.
Well, the other main subject we have to talk about is while we were watching Excellent Adventure, like a lot of people, honestly, I've heard more and more as people have been talking about their weekend, a lot of people while watching, particularly the third Bill and Ted movie, heard the news, and we did as well, because Sherry's phone was blowing up, and I look over, and I could tell by the look on her face, something's wrong. It's bad news. And I said, what's wrong? And I had the remote. The remote was kind of in between you and I. So I paused Excellent Adventure, and I turned around. I was like, what's wrong? She said, Chadwick Boseman died. What?
Yeah.
Wait, Chadwick Boseman? Not Chad Michael Murray? Like, in my head, I'm thinking it's got to be somebody else.
I didn't honestly hear her. I mean, I heard her say Chadwick Boseman, but it wasn't clear to me. And, like, Noelle reacted, like, wait, who died? And she said Chadwick Boseman. And immediately my heart, like, my brain went right to, oh, my God, was it like Kobe Bryant? Because we had that tragedy earlier this year of Kobe Bryant and his wife.
Yeah.
Dying
his daughter,
in a helicopter crash. And I'm like, yeah, his daughter, I'm sorry. His daughter dying in a helicopter crash. And he was in his early 40s. And I'm like, oh my God, was there another accident? Because that immediately, that's where my, any person in their 30s, 40s, 50s, like it has to be a tragic.
Yeah, anytime
accident.
You hear somebody who's dying prematurely, definitely before their time and at an age like 43, you assume it has to be some kind of accident, like something's wrong.
I thought
especially,
he was murdered, something. My head went to a dark place. I immediately opened Twitter and they had the statement of colon cancer. Like, oh, son of a bitch.
I know.
Poor
I
man
know.
Was suffering.
Well, that's the remarkable thing is that, you know, considering he was struggling with this for the last 4 years, fighting colon cancer, he did the Black Panther movie and Infinity War and Endgame, and granted, he had a smaller part in Endgame, of course, but the idea that he was doing all this work while battling colon cancer is astonishing.
He's changing the world, essentially.
Literally.
Not just playing a character, changing the world, because... To look at Black Panther was the highest grossing movie of 2018, and Infinity War is right behind it. And the reason for that is because Infinity War, while it was the most anticipated movie of all time, Black Panther culturally was more relevant, and more people who didn't love the Marvel movies saw Black Panther.
Oh, totally.
I know a coworker who said, I'm going to see Black Panther. I've never seen a Marvel movie in my life, but I'm seeing Black Panther, because it was culturally relevant for her to be like, there's a black superhero, and it's not, you know, Meteor Man or something. It's a legitimate like, you know, it was a cultural, it was more than a superhero, it was more than just another period.
Oh yeah, it was, it's
was
a moment
icon. This character was an icon, so
well, that and everything surrounding it, not just the character, because that, you know, there's the people who aren't willing to look back beyond the last 5 years and not realize that there were 3 Blade movies. And yeah, there was Meteor Man. I mean, there are other characters you can point to. Yeah. Spawn. There are other movies where there have been black superheroes.
That movie's funny. I liked that when I was a kid.
Well, I did too, actually. I watched it again probably about 2 years ago. And I think it's a funny movie. It's dumb, but I enjoy it.
I'd love to rewatch that, actually.
I think it's on Crackle or something like that. I saw recently. It's on one of the streaming services.
So fucking funny.
It is really funny. And cheesy, but it is exactly what you expect it to be. And I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
But anyway, it's also the idea that it's this predominantly black cast. And, you know, its success dispelled the myth of, you know, a movie with such a prominent, you know, that's a majority black cast isn't going to play internationally. It's not going to make as much money. You know, there was the idea that it couldn't be as successful, and then it exploded, and in that way has made everybody sit back and say, oh, a movie like this can be successful.
Yeah.
A movie with a largely black cast, especially, frankly, an all-star cast. If you're looking at everybody who's in that movie,
yeah,
it's a strong cast regardless. I mean, everybody in that movie is yeah, amazing.
Besides Infinity War and Endgame or even Civil War, that mm-hmm, is one of the best cast Marvel movies ever.
Oh, hands down.
Black Panther is unbelievable.
Yeah, they really went for it. And everybody wanted to do it,
yes,
for that reason. And it really was that good. And to have Ryan Coogler direct it, too. I mean, the director of Creed and Fruitvale Station. Come on.
He's so, yeah.
I mean, what an amazing get he was to have him do that. And
he's one of the best working today by far.
Oh, for sure. And even when it came to, you know, film nerds like us were aware of Chadwick Boseman at the point when he was announced in November 2014
yeah,
as Black Panther, because he was in 42 the year before. Get On Up, the James Brown movie, got a smaller release and was already out at that point, but wasn't playing that much. It was playing in a few theaters in L.A. I knew that, even though I missed it, because it wasn't playing long. And unfortunately, I didn't see it until, I saw it in California. So it was maybe 2017 or 18. It may have been actually after Black Panther. So it may have been 2018. Even though I'd wanted to see it, it's just one of those movies I'd kind of forgotten about.
So until he would have been sick during that production too, right? I've yet to get On Up, but it's one of those I
really it came out in 2014. So now, not at that point. But that is they said 42. Kevin Feige has said that 42 was definitely big in making their decision. That movie and his performance
that
was a big
2013,
factor.
And then he was announced in 2014.
Right. But Get On Up is, that's a movie where if you watch it, taking Black Panther out of it, especially if you saw that at the time, before Civil War and everything else, you know, certainly before he was cast as Black Panther, you look at that and say, that dude is special. That guy is going to do some great stuff in his career.
Because
when you watch his portrayal of James Brown, he's all in, and he's way believable. And, you know, he may not look like James Brown, and I know that's generally the criticism of a lot of biopics is, well, they don't look, Joaquin Phoenix doesn't look like Johnny Cash. And, you know, there are very few times that actually happens. And
it makes you think that they are. You believe it. If the performance
exactly,
is good, you believe it.
It doesn't matter. It really doesn't. You know, as long as the performance is good, you need somebody who has the ability, not somebody who looks like, you know, Tom Hanks doesn't look like Fred Rogers. It's okay, because the performance, you still believe that this is Fred Rogers. And same thing with James Brown. You're watching this movie and you're like, damn, this movie is, this dude is great. And the movie is great. And
wasn't Mick Jagger in that movie? Like, or did he produce
it? He wasn't
it,
in it. He produced it, though.
Okay.
And Dan Aykroyd is in it. And I know he had handed it somewhere. I don't remember if he was producer or what, but he was obviously friends with James Brown because of Blues Brothers and Dr. Detroit. You know, he'd known James Brown for a long time. So he's in there as James Brown's manager. Jack's Hollywood father, Dan Aykroyd.
Yes.
And anyway.
Well, I never hear from.
Yeah, unfortunately. We're waiting. We're waiting for that Crystal Skull vodka endorsement for Cape. Mm. Whenever you're ready. Whenever you want to sponsor the show. Mr. Aykroyd,
you let
us know, because look at this face. Do you see this guy? He looks so much like you.
Yes.
It has to be yours.
Were you at Point Pleasant, New Jersey in 1984, Mr. Aykroyd? Just kidding.
Maybe. Were you promoting Ghostbusters? Never mind.
No.
No one's making any accusations, but...
No.
We are, it's, however, it's asking...
Pure coincidence. I know who my parents are, so...
But we're asking for advertising money. We're not going
to... I mean, if you want to play along, I could totally, you know, you can make a case.
We'll talk about that off mic. But anyway, the shock of Chadwick Boseman, and you know what? It's I was saying it the other night. There have been a lot of these in the last few years where it's sudden, you know, whether it's David Bowie or Prince. You know, Kobe Bryant was obviously a tragedy in that it was an accident.
Horrible accident.
Horrible accident. And, you know,
Since Kobe happened, whenever a younger person has died, that's immediately where I go to of a tragedy. Like, my mind just goes right there. So not that I was like any kind of relieved that it was cancer, but it was kind of like, oh my God, like, I don't know. It just was such a, because sometimes when you see people die, you don't ever get the straight answer of like, this person died. And it's like, well, how did they die? How did someone die at 47?
Right. And there's no public explanation made, which is, I would think, sometimes almost worse, because then it leaves people to speculate. Was it this? Was it drugs? Was it some, you know what I mean? Because there's so many times you hear about, oh no, so-and-so OD'd. And that's why, I mean, people even say about Prince, like, you know, Prince was a druggie. It's like, well, he was on drugs because of his hip.
How did, I remember sitting at the barber when the news broke, like, how did he die? Can someone please explain to me how did Prince actually die? Like,
And that's it. Like, there's sometimes you just don't get those answers as much as we want them. We don't necessarily get them. So the fact that they came out and said exactly what it was. And look, even as far as keeping that private, because that's something, you know, assholes want to get pissed off about. Like, why didn't we know? Why didn't he tell us? It's because it's none of your fucking business.
No,
that's
it's
why.
Not.
It's not. And at the same time, if you don't want to tell anybody, I get it. I've said before, I had a friend of mine who passed away from cancer who kept it private and didn't want anyone to know. And I get why, because it's going to be the first question anybody asks you when they see you. How are you? How have you been? How's your health? You know, everyone's going to ask you about that.
And
you don't want that to define you. I understand it. And Bowie, same thing. He kept it quiet. He didn't say anything about it. And that's why it was such
a
shock.
Alan Rickman, another one.
Alan Rickman. That's another example. And that was another one. Like, what? Alan Rickman died.
Yeah, he had cancer? Like, Oh, my God.
Yeah, that's another perfect example
because
of like,
we live in this society where it's like, if you learn, look at it this way. If someone said, oh, David Bowie has cancer, or Alan Rickman has cancer, or Chadwick Boseman has cancer, it becomes Death Watch. It becomes like celebrity.
Oh God,
Oh,
it's
Chadwick
horrible.
Spotted outside of the Hilton Hotel in Beverly Hills, looking very frail, and then you see bullshit like National Enquirer, the last sad days of Chadwick Boseman. Like, fuck off.
Yeah.
So I understand why it's like no one's business. It's like this man was suffering, and he wasn't suffering in silence. He had his family, and that's all that was important to him, and that's all that the explanation needs to be.
Absolutely. So, and you know what? He was able to do the work. I mean, when you think about the impact this guy had from playing Jackie Robinson, James Brown, Thurgood Marshall, and then T'Challa, the king of Wakanda in Black
icons.
Panther. I mean, playing icons, and that's what he wanted to do. He wanted to make movies that were positive for Black people. He's said it in interviews that that's what he wanted for his career. Mm-hmm. And you know what? He did it in such a short amount of time. And it's a shame that we're not going to have him around, and we're not going to see other performances that he would have given us, which would have been amazing, which would have gotten him Oscars, I have no doubt. And he was a directing major as well in school, so I'm sure he would have transitioned to directing.
Everything at his feet. We were just beginning to see what he was capable of.
Yeah, in his prime, in a lot of ways. I mean, in as much as now having the juice to get things done, because, you know, with being in the Marvel franchise, you can get stuff greenlit, even smaller movies, as we've seen, you know, other people who are part of the MCU have gone off and done little projects that they probably couldn't have gotten done otherwise if they didn't have the association of being also a character in the Marvel universe. And it's, I mean, I'm sad in, you know, I'm sad that the man lost his life. I'm also sad for the fact that we're not going to get to see what he would have given us, of course. And it's horrible.
I feel really sad for little kids who finally young, and it could be anyone, white, black, no, any
absolutely
nationality, who found comfort in Black Panther, who thought, that's my superhero, he's my hero. And now to know that that actor's gone, I feel so, that's who I feel the most, I mean, obviously for him and his family, but outside of that, like, young people who were so inspired by him were,
right,
he's gone. Like, I don't know how I would have felt at 7 years old if Michael Keaton, God forbid, had died under similar circumstances.
Totally.
I would have been
devastated. Yeah, no, well, to compare apples to apples, at that age, it would have been like, what?
Yeah.
He's gone? Like, Batman's gone? And, it would have been shocking to us the way it's got to be for kids who are fans of Black Panther. I totally understand that. And,
there's been people on Instagram and Twitter, I follow a lot of toy pages, and a lot of people are posting, my son has his Marvel figures out, and they're all standing in tribute to the Black Panther. So, like, it's just so, this is bigger than just, oh, it's another Marvel movie. It's bigger than just a Marvel movie. It's influence. And this movie influenced more than, so many young people found comfort in that character. For kids who like Captain America, maybe he's not your favorite. Maybe Hulk's not your favorite, but Black Panther was my guy. And to be robbed of that sucks.
Totally.
I feel so horrible for that.
And the good thing is, you know, in light of all this, and I'm not trying to polish a turd here in as much as, like, this is bad news, I'm trying to put a spin on it, but the reality is now people will see other movies he's done, and they will see 42 and learn about Jackie Robinson. They will see Get On Up and learn about James Brown. They will see Marshall and learn about Thurgood Marshall and that story. So that is great in the fact that because he chose those roles, because he's played four icons, including one fictional, then people will now learn more about these stories and his influence will be spread deeper and wider because of the choices he made, because of the career that he had, and because of the performances he gave us. That yeah. can't be understated.
Not at all.
It really, really can't. And, you know, there are a lot of people who have been saying, you know, particularly over the weekend, that, you know, we shouldn't be talking about the future of Black Panther. We shouldn't be talking about Marvel movies. You know, this man lost his life and there are more important things.
You could talk about it, but there's some websites, obviously, like I believe it was Screen Rant or something said, now what should Marvel do? Not the time. Like,
well, and that's exactly it. But I mean, at the same time, when you do movie oriented news, what are you supposed to talk about? And, you know, I'm a fan of John Campia, who's a fellow broadcaster and a movie pundit, so to speak, but and a filmmaker in his own right. But he, you know, put out a statement last night for those of us who subscribe to his YouTube channel and just said, look, a lot of people understandably want to talk about Chadwick Boseman, don't necessarily want to look at the future of the MCU. But the fact is, I just want to give everybody a heads up. Look, if you don't want to hear this conversation, don't tune into tomorrow's show because we are going to talk about it, meaning his show today.
Yeah.
And I appreciate that. And a lot of fans appreciated that as well because, yeah, there are people who don't want to talk about it. But the reality is, because Black Panther was such an influential character, was such an important movie to the MCU, and T'Challa is such a huge forward. Part of it. Well, yeah, that question has to be asked and will be asked because of that influence. It's not being disrespectful to the man because he passed away prematurely and under horrible circumstances. But you know what? The question does need to be answered. People are going to be wondering what's happened, you know, and what's going to happen and how does this change things? It does, you know, when you're part of something that's so huge, in this case, the biggest film franchise around. Yeah. And the same question was asked, you know, after Carrie Fisher passed away, well, what are they going to do about the third Star Wars movie? You know, how are they going to handle this? It is a realistic question. It's not being disrespectful to the person. It's because of what the person gave us.
Context. It's how you can do it. There's a way you can do it respectfully and say, like, we can talk about this. And then there's a sensationalized version of, like, what does Marvel do now? Like, and there's your clickbait headline. There's a way
exactly.
to talk about it. So
exactly. And, you know, for me, I look at it. Yeah. At this point to talk about it, it has been a few days and there is no standard appropriate amount of time before you can talk about what's next for the character that this person has given us. I understand why people want to start asking that question now. And for, I don't know what Marvel's going to do. We can speculate all we want. Mm-hmm. I think this world they've built with Wakanda and these characters they've introduced us to, aside from T'Challa, I think it would be a shame to not do anything with it going forward. Yeah. But at the same time, you know, they could just end. I mean, they could certainly end T'Challa's story with just how, you know, the ending of Endgame and showing that moment of him with his mother
ending.
And sister. Yeah. And say that's it. And if they want to leave Black Panther alone, then that's fine. If they're going to, I don't know what happens in the comic. I don't know if Shuri takes over as Black Panther or anything like that. Like, I don't know what happens beyond T'Challa in the comics. If they didn't continue it, I would understand. And it is an incredibly tough act to follow. At the same time, I think audiences would be understanding if they did have a different character become the Black Panther. But I mean, Black Panther 2 was on the docket, you know, for 2022. And obviously that's not going to happen.
Prime release date. Yeah.
Yeah. In this form now, it's not going to happen. So unfortunately, we don't know what's going to happen. But my thing is, if they didn't do anything more with Black Panther, I think it'd be a shame because of what they've given us, what they've shown us with Wakanda, what they built. But at the same time, I would be okay with it because where do you go from here?
Yeah.
But what do you think, Jack? Do you have any feelings about
it? I think, well, and this isn't just a cop-out answer. I think Marvel will do what's right. Marvel will know what they can do is right and go from there. If they want to continue it, they certainly could look at their options. Okay, how do we continue this? Do we just continue with the other characters? Do we feel, does someone take over for the Black Panther mantle? Do we work this into real life? Or, like you said, it had a perfect ending with Endgame where, I mean, even the movie Black Panther is very open and closed from start to finish. And then the world, not for people who haven't seen Black Panther yet, Sorry, you're listening to the wrong podcast.
But
like,
first of all, do it.
Yeah, do it, please.
Get on Disney Plus and watch it, for crying out loud.
But to the way that they open Wakanda up at the end, and the way that his story with Killmonger kind of has an open and shut storyline throughout the film, it is a perfect standalone film. And then you incorporate him into Endgame, and Infinity War, and Endgame. And in Endgame, he has, again, a similar happy ending where peace is made, and it's the fairy tale ending for him. So you can look at it both ways and be like, okay, there is a perfect opportunity to just leave it as is. And then there's an opportunity to, but there could be an opportunity that we can do something else in the future. The only thing is, no one has the, like you said, no one has the answer. Marvel is going to know what's right. Kevin Feige, I'm sure in the coming days or whenever the grieving process is over, might start thinking of, what do we do now? How do we honor? And not just him. The MCU is a collaborative process with not just filmmakers, but the actors that they've worked with over a decade now. I'm sure there'll be a collaborative experience of like, what could we do to honor Chadwick? What can we do to help with the Black Panther? What's the next logical step? And they could take as much time as they want. So there's no clock on it. There's no anything. Do what's best. If you want to continue it, I'm sure they'll find a way. I don't know how. I don't have the answers. I mean, we could speculate all we want, but I have no way I don't see it. I mean, if you leave it up to me, I'd say end it at Endgame and walk away. And if you can incorporate other characters down the line in other situations, sure. But I don't have the answers. So I trust Marvel. That's just me as a fan. They'll do what's best for whatever they feel is the best option. And that's all I'm going to leave it at that.
Cool. And I agree. They're going to figure something out. And, you know, with every production being shut down, then we don't know kind of what's happening anyway. So they can certainly restructure it and shuffle everything that they need to, because we don't know if Black Widow's coming out in November. And I know we're just talking in technical stuff right now. So if something else gets pushed back and replaces that Black Panther 2 spot, it would work.
Well, that's it.
You know,
and
Black Widow gets pushed to February.
It has potential to be pushed back because everything's been pushed back. So it was going to be a May release date in 2022. And I know we were like, oh, Thor, then Black Panther and everything else in 2022. Realistically, they might not have been able to hit that just because of production. And I mean, another thing that could have been a problem, I mean, not saying it's a problem, but like, Chadwick was sick. So, I mean, his physical ability to actually do the film could have been in question.
That's true. I mean,
we'll never know. Like, we could assume Black Panther 2 was on track, but we had no idea that this man was sick. I'm sure Kevin Feige and executives knew what he was fighting, so this wasn't a complete shock to them. I mean, I'm sure they're heartbroken as much as anybody else, but I'm sure that they were in the know to be like, hey, Chadwick's sick and he might not have another 6 months, realistically. So who knows what their plans even were, contingency plans before that, before he passed. If there were contingency plans, no one knows. And we'll never
of course,
know.
Yeah. I mean, we don't know. In as much as he may have tried to keep them in the loop, especially at the point, I mean, I certainly hope he had some degree of closure and that it wasn't just a sudden thing, that it was it sounds horrible to say, but there was some kind of decline that he was aware of and that he was able to reach out and say, listen, this is what's going on. I don't want to not let you know what's happening because, you know, we have a contract. We have these plans for this character and I don't want to leave you hanging. I would hope so. And if he didn't, you know what? That's okay too, because he has his own life to think about, not just what Marvel's going to do. Marvel's going to carry on long after he passes away, maybe even after you and I are gone, Jack. You know, there may be Marvel movies forever at this point. So it would be great if he gave them some consideration, let them know. I'm sure that's something we'll find out down the line. But at the same time, you know, we haven't been in that position where we've had to obviously make that decision and say, who do we let know about this? So nonetheless, we love you, Chadwick Boseman. We love what you gave us.
Missed.
And I'm glad other people are going to get to see your performances and see, hopefully look deeper into the stories of the people who you portrayed on screen. They'll hopefully look into Jackie Robinson, Thurgood Marshall, James Brown, and really that you will have uplifted the Black community in the way you want it to.
Yes.
I mean, I really do. I mean, we'll never understand that as two white guys. We just won't. We're not going to understand what Black Panther meant and what, you know, these other three portrayals of Black icons are going to mean to people.
But it all opens the doors for Black history. Like if
it does
his performance as James Brown. Let me get into let me listen to some James Brown and like let me go and research what James Brown's all about, or Thurgood Marshall or Jackie Robinson. Let me learn about these people more because it is all Black history. And Chadwick has he portrayed those characters, and that's his moment of Black history also. And just also with T'Challa is going to live on forever. If it's just one movie or if they make plans to change things, whatever, like we just discussed, that movie will live on forever. That was an iconic performance in an iconic film. And that movie it was the only MCU movie to be nominated for Best Picture, and rightfully so. It's a fantastic film. It's not my favorite, but it's one of the better ones. It's one of the absolute best Marvel films. So it's going to live on forever. That influence will never die whatsoever. So,
totally.
Yeah.
And we love you, Bill and Ted. Love you, Alex and Keanu.
Thank you, Bill and Ted, for picking us up during this whole sadness. It got my mind off.
It did. For that hour and a half that we watched Face of Music, we weren't thinking about this and the loss of Chadwick Boseman. And again, thank you for taking us out of life for a bit. And, you know, the friendship of Alex and Keanu, I love watching the interviews that they're doing together to promote this movie, because the fact there's a real friendship there really shows. I mean, it's one thing to have chemistry on screen, but the fact that they actually became friends and have stayed friends this entire time, and then have this friendship as the characters as well, that completely shows on screen. And the love they have for each other absolutely comes out on screen and in these interviews. So definitely check those out too, with what the two of them are up to. But what more can we say, folks? That's it. Watch Marshall and Get On Up and 42 and Bill and Ted Face the Music. And if for some reason you haven't seen Black Panther, rent it, stream it, whatever.
Yeah.
And enjoy it.
Yes.
And that's about it. That's what we got for this week. Two big topics that rose out of this weekend. So that's it. So thank you for tuning in. Please like, subscribe, follow, all that other good stuff. You can follow Jack on Twitter at JackWagon85 and on Instagram at JacksonFigure1985. You can follow me on Twitter at Chris Abalo and on Instagram at Chris Sells Out, and follow the show at Cape Pod on Twitter and Instagram. And of course, the show will be back next Monday. So until then, for Jack DeFranco, this is Chris Abalo, and this was yet another experiment.
Wakanda forever!